Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today on Let's Face the Issues is R. Sean McBride, American Freedom Information Institute. He's an attorney with the law firm, both located in DeLand, Florida and Dallas, Texas. He is the managing partner since April of 2012, generally representing clients, including corporate matters and company formation, and preparing negotiated joint venture agreements, advises clients as outside counsel, including securities and compliance issues. Major resume that I am so delighted to be able to have him on the air with us today. And we're talking specifically, ladies and gentlemen, about Senate Bill SB 7014. That is the Senate bill that will give blanket immunity. That's my term. And he's the attorney. He'll answer that question in a moment. But as I view that bill, and I've read the bill, it will give blanket immunity for hospitals and doctors and all medical facilities for whatever they may or may not do in their practice, as long as they say that they have complied with the CDC protocol. Now, the CDC protocol, ladies and gentlemen, let me say this before we get back with Sean. The CDC protocol concerns everything from how you are viewed in giving the PCR test to determine if you have COVID. If you have a broken leg and go into the hospital for the broken leg, they're required by CDC protocol as early on in the hospital stay to test you for COVID. And in fact, I contend that they're disappointed when there's a negative rather than a positive. In fact, many of the PCR tests have turned out to be false positives, and it's caused major chaos and confusion. But beyond the chaos and confusion and the cost of human life. The question on the broadcast today is, how much is a life worth? We're finding the life has very, very little value when compared to the major hundreds of billions of dollars being made in the hospital and the medical field across the nation by following the CDC protocol. Sean, thank you again for joining us on this broadcast. I realize you have a real tight schedule and what you're attempting to do, but I'm thankful that you have jumped into the fray and that you have petitioned our governor to veto the bill. Let's go back in case some have just tuned in. Let's go back for just a moment and tell our listeners about the Senate Bill 7014 and why we, the people, should be against it and why we should encourage you to continue the valiant fight to see that it's vetoed.
Yeah, 7014 on its face is very innocuous. It just extends a period of time that covers this COVID-19 related health care law, and that's a Florida statute 768.381. And that's really where the devil's in the details, in the 768.381 existing law that they want to extend. And that says basically that you have a very, very high burden of proof and very challenging time bringing a claim if a health care provider followed government-issued health standards. So basically, if you do what the CDC says do the way they describe treatment, then you as a healthcare provider can be pretty darn sure that you're not going to face a lawsuit. And so that's the core problem here, right, is pretty darn safe if you do what the CDC says. If you don't do what the CDC says, then, you know, you're in a land of higher risk as a healthcare provider, as a doctor or a hospital, which is why so many hospitals right now, as a matter of procedure, just saying, do what the CDC says, do what the CDC says, because there's no financial incentive for them to do otherwise. In fact, going against the CDC or letting people try things that the CDC hasn't explicitly said is okay means risk for the hospital. So, of course, hospitals are going to be risk adverse, and they're going to try to run away from things like that.
Absolutely. Sean, one of the things in my study of the actual law that they're wanting to enlarge or to extend today in Senate Bill 7014 is that in the law itself, that's already on the books, it's already part of the laws of the state of Florida, that if a suit is filed and it goes before a judge, if the physicians or the medical facilities can show that they followed the CDC protocol to the most part, to the best of their ability, then the judge is required to dismiss the case. What does that give relief for the citizen?
Well, yeah, it tightens the standard. If they follow the CDC protocol, it heightens the standard all the way up to gross negligence or intentional misconduct, which is a very difficult standard from a legal standpoint, right? Your doctor hasn't not just have to be negligent, not make a mistake, but they have to be grossly negligent. They have to make a really egregious mistake, essentially, in order to get there. So that's the problem, right, is they know that if you follow those CDC guidelines, you're going to be safe. And so that's the problem, is it's kind of forcing this groupthink, you know, and this group action.
Well, perhaps, Sean, perhaps we've got some listeners today that may have experienced some of this with putting a loved one in the hospital. I know we had the unfortunate experience of having we have four sons, and our eldest son, 56 years old, was tortured to death in a Virginia hospital. And during the course of his 71 days, the family, by way of Zoom call and by the way of conference calls, had asked the physicians to try this or try that or try the other medicines or other protocols that would have been perhaps a hopeful life-saving protocol if they had instituted it. And they would listen but never would institute it, would simply, by dismissing it, refuse to do so. And I know of case after case after case personally, with friends and family and those in the congregation and those in the college and the university that had family members that had been put in the hospital, and immediately they refused to listen to the family. In fact, once going into the hospital, there's the mindset that we're in control and you cannot tell us what to do. And that comes out of CDC protocol. Example, my wife was in the hospital for 6 days because she needed additional oxygen that our oxygen generator did not produce for her. And in going into the hospital, being checked in through the emergency room, the little nurse, Heather, when my wife said, put on the record, whatever happens, no ventilator. And the little nurse looked at my wife and said, we might just have to let you die. And the mindset is, in the hospitals today, that you don't have say-so, that you don't have a patient's bill of rights. And I find it super egregious that we have so-called patient's bill of rights, but there's no teeth in it. Sean, the question that I want to ask is, if we have, for example, there's another bill that's being worked on in the House and the Senate, and I'm thankful to have had a part of it. It's Senate Bill 988, and it will give patients a little bit restoration of the patient's bill of rights, forcing the hospitals to allow patients to visit relatives and loved ones in the hospital without being summarily shut out. Today across America, we have more security guards at hospitals than in many of our prison facilities across our nation. But it's designed to keep the patients out so that there's no patient advisory from an advocate as a family member. And so in that, I've stated to our legislators, Aaron Bean and other legislators, that we need to have teeth in it, that if they do not allow the patient to ask for and receive medications that he has the right to do so in patient's bill of rights, there should be an avenue that there could be redress through the courts to force them to do so. Are you in agreement with that? Do you think we have a secure patient's bill of rights? Should there be teeth in anything that will set the citizens in a position of being able to say, what I want for myself, what I want for my family member, how that family member should be treated by the hospitals. Or does the hospital just have a carte blanche authoritarian mindset that we can treat you the way we want to? What's your answer from a legal standpoint?
Yeah, well, Patient's Bill of Rights 381026 here in Florida, you know, is a very nice-looking law on its surface. One of the problems with the Patient's Bill of Rights that becomes evident very quickly is, you know, there's a right to refuse treatment that's subject to other laws. So if there's other laws saying, you know, you need to take a treatment, you lose your right to decline treatments, which seems like a fundamental principle of medicine, that if you don't want to be treated, you shouldn't be treated. And the other part is, you know, you start looking at the part about access for patients and loved ones. And, you know, there's carve-out saying that you have to give access to a patient or a loved one to be with you at the hospital or at a treatment. But it also then goes on and says if the healthcare provider decides it's too risky, they don't have to give you access. So we're seeing a lot of abuse of that, right? So first is just getting a good decision maker in the room. And most of us know the person under treatment in many cases is not the best decision maker, right? Because you're on medicines, you're sick, you're in the hospital, you're unwell, you're not in the best position to be evaluating everything going on and be making treatment decisions. That's why you generally want to have a loved one with you. But we're seeing, you know, people being locked out from even having somebody there. But then what we're watching happen is once they get in there is these hospitals are saying, well, you know, we can only give you the treatments we're allowed under law to give you. We can only give you the treatments that are in our treatment protocols. So it's not working from the standpoint where a patient really can compel a treatment. A patient can't force a treatment. There's been litigators fighting these battles and losing out there where they're trying to get these hospitals to recognize more rights for the patient and say, hey, a patient really should drive the ship and they should decide what treatments they're going to get. The courts are saying, well, they're in that particular healthcare facility, they're in that hospital, so they can only get what that healthcare facility or hospital will allow them to get. You know, because if the healthcare facility for liability reasons or regulatory reasons or whatever reason doesn't want to give them a treatment, then, you know, it's too bad, so sad for the patient. And that's really, I don't think most of us understood that that was the deal prior to COVID, but it's becoming pretty clear that that's the deal that Florida law lays out right now.
And as a result of that, Jeff, it is evident based on the statistical data and the research that has been done by hundreds and hundreds of honest physicians and scientists. Dr. Katz, an investigative researcher for Yale University and the Mitchell Hospital with Yale University, he said, and I quote, "Don't put your family members in the hospital. The doctors will kill them." And he goes on to say very clearly that they do not do it purposely or wittingly, but they do it because of following the CDC protocol. It's recognized in the medical society, in the medical circle of those doctors and investigatory bodies that have any competence at all, that this is very dangerous. For example, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that remdesivir is one of the major protocols that's used if you're rated as a COVID patient, that the first thing they do. I know, according to my research on it, the World Health Organization has already admitted that remdesivir will kill a patient and not to do it, but it's still under the CDC protocol. We find that there's so many conflicting rules and regulations and guidelines coming out of St. Anthony Fauci, or the one that is basically in charge of the Oval Office today, not Biden, but Anthony Fauci, when it comes to medical health. We're finding it is the love of money. And, of course, you're familiar with the fact that the scripture is clear it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. We're seeing as a result of the money factor that the decisions are not being made on what's best for my health to your health, what's best for the cash register. Again, I'm looking at the research on Ascension Hospital System and showing the profits. For example, cash on hand went from $17 billion in 2020 to $26 billion. A $9 billion increase, 53% increase, because of them following the CDC protocol. And that's happening across the nation. So what is your suggestion? We can talk all day about the problem, what we see taking place. What's the cure? What's the suggestion? What's the answer for what we're faced with this bill, with the egregious nature of it, and the continued diminution of patients' rights if it is renewed? What is your suggestion? How should we, the people, become involved? What should we do?
The short answer is very simple. Just reach out to the governor's office, media, any contacts you have, and say, veto this bill. It is not pro-patient. It is not what we want for Florida. That is the short-term answer. We've got a very short window between now, Monday, and Thursday to get this thing knocked down and gone, right? So everybody needs to get on that. Should note that the Florida press secretary has specifically asked that you do not contact her about this bill. She's put out a tweet on Saturday night saying she does not want to be contacted about this bill. But continue contacting folks. Keep telling people that, you know, we want medical freedom in Florida. We want good incentives. And so get this one gone. There can be much better legislation passed that protects doctors and if they follow patients' decisions, if they follow the will of their patients. So that's where we start. And then more comprehensively, we've already pointed out a number of issues here on this law that could be – in these laws in Florida that could be changed, such as, expanding that patient's bill of rights, going back and taking away the authority of the state to force treatments against people's will or allowing the state to force quarantine or isolation or examination or testing. These are all things that could be addressed in the longer term. This week, it's about killing this terrible bill, which is going to misalign incentives, and then we can improve from there.
Let me tuck this in, Sean. Ladies and gentlemen, the governor's telephone number is 1-850. That's area code 850-717-9337. And when you call, you'll probably get some type of voice mail. Leave word. You don't have to necessarily say who you are. If you want to, you can. I have explicitly told them who I am and my concerns about the bill and asked them, Governor, please, please, please veto Senate Bill 7014. Veto 7014. And I went on to say, Sean, in my voicemail to the governor on that if this bill, if you sign the bill and it goes into law, it will be a slap in the face for every Floridian. And I believe that we need to recognize that there is a sense of ire and concern on the part of the citizens in the state of Florida, because I believe we've been maltreated enough across the nation. Of course, I recognize that in Florida we've got a governor that we've had more freedom than you find in most other states. But I think, Sean, I had one legislator say that they passed this bill because the governor insisted on it. Did the governor insist on this bill?
We've not heard that directly ourselves. We think the healthcare, industry obviously likes this bill because again, it makes their life very simple. Follow CDC protocols, get liability protection, no muss, no fuss, no thinking, no worries. And again, it probably goes too far because nobody's talking about the patient, right? And all these discussions, all these flyers I've seen talks about keeping hospitals open, hospital solvency, but I see very little analysis about what's good for the patient. You know, the will of the patient is what's coming up here through this grassroots efforts from the letter writing, from the people calling. That's where the patient's interest is coming up from. I haven't seen that in the legislative notes, right? That's all about hospitals, what's best for hospitals, what's good for doctors. Let's start thinking about the patients. Let's start thinking about what people get. Not thinking about any particular lobby. And Governor DeSantis, Epic Times pointed out, he's got tough decisions to make, right? Because, here he is, he's got his party all one direction and his core values seem to point another direction. And, let's hope he acts with his core values about individual liberty, freedom, making your own decisions, the types of things that he talks about in the media and that he is supported in many of his actions. Well, now here's the real test, right? Is his actions going to be consistent with, what he's done in the past and what he says?
Well, Sean, I'm looking at an article, and I believe this is from one of the major news medias that you just mentioned Epoch Times, says Floridians demand DeSantis veto bill extending near immunity to hospitals and treating COVID patients, dated February the 15th. And it states the Republican-led effort seeks to extend a law that grants near immunity to health care providers for their treatment of COVID-19 as long as they follow the CDC guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. I find it sad, personally. I've been a conservative, a Christian conservative slash Republican since I registered to vote, and I've not missed a vote, local, state, or national, for about 60 years. And I'm concerned when I see our Republicans in Tallahassee passing an onerous bill like this, and I'm finding that each one of them, individually I've talked with, each one have said this is because of the protection of the hospital. But just as you said, where's the patient's Bill of Rights? Where are we, the people, being protected in this? I know, talking with Anthony Sabatini down in South Florida, and you may know Anthony.
Yep.
He's been a stalwart standing for the against this and voting against it. And when you look down the list of those that voted for this bill, it is absolutely a sham and a shame. I believe, and this is just me talking, you can take the position that that's not your stand, but I believe that it's because of what we find in lobbyists. If you find those crawling around the corners of the Capitol and the Knotts building, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you find those over in the corner are generally lobbyists trying to get something passed. And I believe this is a bill that is an outgrowth of the lobbyists pushing for this to be done and out of the healthcare industry, as you've stated a moment ago. Sean, take a minute. Tell our listeners how they can reach you if they'd like to get in touch with the American Freedom Information Institute. If they would like to ask further questions that might be from a legal standpoint, I don't mind saying, and inviting our listeners, you may agree or disagree, but if we've got listeners that's been, they feel that they've been harmed in some way as a result of malfeasance or maltreatment from the physicians and the doctors and the medical institution, I'm recommending very highly to anybody I talk with, find an attorney and sue the pants off. That, I believe, is the only remedy for this issue. But speak to our listeners for just a moment. We've got about 3 minutes to go on the broadcast.
Go on over to www.amfreedomii.com. That's the American Freedom Information Institute. Our website is just a shortened version of it, amfreedomii.com. And if you go to that website, you can see the letter we sent to Governor DeSantis. You can also scroll about halfway down the page. Get on our email list where you can get email updates from us because we're talking about this and other issues largely related to medical freedom. We'd love to keep in touch with you, send you updates, help you see what other issues are coming down the pipe line. And then also feel free to reach out that way. You can, once you get on there, there's different ways you can contact us on the website. So feel free to reach out if you have particular issues. And, you know, that's what we're doing. We're building a grassroots citizens-based organization and getting the information out. Oh, and we're also on Substack. So if you're a subscriber there, you want to get some updates there, go to Substack, look for American Freedom Information Institute, get updates from us there too. But, you know, let's keep in touch. This is all about getting citizens organized and active to make the difference.
And let me once again, ladies and gentlemen, give you that telephone number for the governor's office. And I highly recommend stay on the phone. Get friends and loved ones and relatives to get on the phone and call the governor's office. Leave a recorded plea. Governor, please, please, please veto Senate Bill 7014. And if, Governor, if you allow the bill to go into effect, there's the possibility, by the way, Sean, our listeners need to understand, the governor has two or three options. He can either sign the bill, veto the bill, or leave the bill on his desk for 7 days, and on the eighth day it becomes, immediately becomes law. And so I would prefer to see the bill vetoed. That will say to the House of Representatives and the Senate that we, that the people are not interested in following their leadership in that realm. But, Sean, I'm looking at an article that says, worst experience of my life, early vaccine adopters suffer injuries and struggle to get proper care. Another headline, U.S. agencies quietly studying reports of post-vaccination neurological issues. Another issue, another report. Government buries the CDC data because it's misinterpreted by the anti-vaxxers. Another article, flawed science. John Hopkins professors crush political propaganda out of CDC. Even the John Hopkins University now, in their studies, and I've read 8 or 9 studies out of John Hopkins, and even now the most recent study out of John Hopkins says that what the CDC protocol is saying is anti-science, is anti-medicine, is against the patient, and is detrimental to the human life. How do you respond to that sense coming out of John Hopkins about CDC?
Yeah, well, here's the concern, right? A lot of people have been concerned about the CDC. It tends to be this top-down medical decision, right? One size fits all. We'll dictate from our central offices how everything's done. And that's really not how medicine works. It needs to be more customized. So this whole idea of having independent decision-making is what we're talking about. Let's get away from any one decision-making body, any possible mistakes. And, you know, as we pointed out in other broadcasts, and our email list, you know, CDC and FDA, they've approved a lot of things and then withdrawn the approvals. They've learned over the time. So just because it comes from the CDC or FDA doesn't mean it's right,
yes.
Doesn't mean it's going to be right forever, because they've even rethought their decision-making in the past. So we then need to open the channels so that people can go a different direction, so that they can innovate, so they can challenge things when they see new things. That's what we need to work towards.
And may I say to our listeners also, Sean, and I have said this consistently, and I have multiple scientists and physicians that have stated the same thing. If you place a loved one in the hospital, never, ever, ever leave them alone if possible. If you can't be there, you need to get a patient representative, someone that is a patient advocate, to make sure that what you say is carried out, or take that patient out of the hospital and place them someplace that they won't hear what you say in relationship to what is best for the patient. Sean, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us today. And again, give your contact information to our listeners on how they might reach your organization.
Yeah, just go over to amfreedomii.com. It's really all there on the website, amfreedomii there.com. And then when you go there, you'll find our mailing address, email address, web, you know, phone number, all that good stuff's all over there. So just go over there, check it out, and get back in touch.
Sounds great. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.